This is Night Call, nationwide listener call-in show dedicated to the creation of free and responsible dialogue on the vital issues of our day. Night Call is an open forum. Speak for yourself. Ask your own questions. Call Night Call Collect from anywhere in North America. From the East, Midwest, and West, call 212-749-3311. From the New York area, call 866-5010. Now from New York City, Night Call's host, Del Shields.
Good evening. Tonight, my guest calling in from New York City is Dr. Margaret Mead, the famed anthropologist, and we'll be talking about sex education in the schools. In more than 34 states across the United States, a sometimes savage fight has erupted over what is called sex education. The John Birch Society sees it as teaching raw sex to children, while others see it as family relations or an extension of biology. Well, just what is meant by sex education? What, if anything, should the children be taught? And is school the right place for it? Or is it really the parent's job? These are some of the questions for Dr. Mead, who is the author of many books, including The Coming of Age in Samoa. And of course, for our Night Call listeners, our question to you is, do you want your children to be taught sex education in schools? Dr. Mead, good evening.
Good evening.
And thank you so very much for being with us again. Dr. Mead, we'll begin our Night Call conversation by asking, why is there such a great controversy over sex education in public schools?
Well, because we realize that the only way that we can be certain that all children have the necessary education to protect them and to protect society has to be somehow centered in the schools, because this is the only way that we reach all children. In the past, where parents expected their children to live a life very much like their own in the same community, in the same part of the world, parents could teach their children just as much or as little as they'd been taught, and the society went on. But today, when children are exposed to television and films and books from all over the world, which parents cannot control, they also need some kind of sensible, carefully planned background education that will help them sort out all the things that they're exposed to. And also, the children are going into a world where the parents can't follow them any longer and can't completely protect them. And many parents, in fact, almost all parents, are not prepared to give the kind of education that children need or will need 8, 10, 12 years from now in a world that's so different from the world in which they grew up. I don't think it's at all surprising that many parents feel very alarmed. I think this is especially likely to be true if they have been brought up with very little background. And so they have very little idea what it would be like if children were taught rather simple biology when they're small and were given a thorough grounding in biology as when they're a little older, combined with some sense of what human relations are like, what it's like to fall in love and be courted and marry and become parents themselves. If they receive very little education, verbal, articulate education of this sort, of course it's worrying. And I think the worrying is quite natural, but it's being exploited at present for political purposes in many cases.
Well, why does the John Birch Society see teaching sex as, they call it raw sex? So what do they mean first by raw sex?
I suppose by raw sex they mean sex that's unadorned with any kind of euphemisms. And the John Birch Society and many other groups of their sort see trouble almost everywhere. And this has been going on now for a good many years. In fact, it's been going on longer than the John Birch Society has been going on, when some groups of very worried conservative Americans have been afraid of everything. This this attack on sex education is very like earlier attacks on mental health, attacks on UNESCO. Something new becomes a focus of people's fears about change.
This is Night Call in New York, and tonight our conversation is sex education in the schools. Our guest calling in is Dr. Margaret Mead. We'll return to our guest and begin accepting phone calls following station identification. Stay tuned for the Night Call Network.
So, cornball. Yes, it is, isn't it? It pushes Squaresville ideas like love, patience, kindness, joy, beauty. It believes in understanding, charity, sacredness of life, honor, brotherhood. It promotes moderation, justice, peace, reconciliation, serenity. Who needs it? Who needs it when we have LSD, amphetamines, alcohol, war, pornography, agonized cities, race hate, the H-bomb, heroin, and little boys eating bits of plaster because there's nothing else in the house to eat. So for heaven's sake, don't get caught in your church or synagogue, or you just might want to start changing the world around.
Speak for yourself from anywhere in North America. Call Night Call Collect from the East, Midwest, and West on 212-749-3311. From the New York area, call 866-5010. Again, Del Shields.
Sex education in the schools is our conversation tonight on Night Call with our guest, Dr. Margaret Mead, and we'll take our first call of the evening from the Bronx. Mr. Mayer is hearing Night Call of WRVR. Mr. Mayer?
Yes, here I am.
Good evening, sir.
My question is essentially this. In very recent years, we've had this great push now to present sex education courses in school, and one of the great arguments has been something along the lines of, well, this is important to teach because it's part of life, and yet the courses are split away from the rest of the curriculum. And it seems to me that in this way, they're made a ready target for the know-nothings and the frightened people like the John Birch Society. I'm wondering whether wouldn't it be a wiser idea if all these matters were worked back into the curriculum instead of the way it has been for so many years where they've been pussyfooting and jumping around it, and instead of splitting it off and handling it in a special way, it just should be brought back into the curriculum in all the various areas that it impinges on.
Yes, I think that's a perfectly sound position. But the problem has been to find teachers who could teach. And if we put it in a regular curriculum, it would mean that all biology teachers or all social studies teachers, or wherever we put things, would have to be prepared to handle things that when they went to school, they weren't taught to handle.
True enough.
And I think this is the reason that we put it in boxes, and perhaps also that it was an innovation. And when people make innovations, they're ardent reformers. They very often want to label their innovation, too. And, of course, that, as you say, makes it more of a target.
Thank you.
Thank you for calling, sir. On Night Call in New York, our conversation, Sex Education in the Schools, our guest, Dr. Margaret Mead. And Dr. Mead, when we talk about sex education, just what is sex education? Perhaps we should begin from there.
Well, it's very different in different school systems in different states. It goes all the way from teaching children rather simple biology, starting with botany and then going up through the simpler animals and finally up to human reproduction, where the emphasis is primarily on what we call the facts of life. Then at later stages in school, there's emphasis on human relationships, on responsibility, on what sex means as part of a whole of a human relationship and how it should be fitted in. And this is likely to come into social studies or courses in family life. And all of these things get labeled as sex education. And it is, as the last questioner suggested, probably a pity that they do get as labeled as this. But we do tend, you know, one might also say that religious education ought to permeate the whole of a school system, but we, because we have different views about religion in this country, we've tended to label religious education and have freed time in school, so the children went to different groups. And I think sex education stands somewhere in the middle here, between a generalized curriculum that we think all teachers are prepared to teach, and a rather specialized curriculum.
Do we find people in this country hung up about sex because there's a fear of it, or because they're ignorant of sex, or is there some kind of guilt complex about sex?
Well, we were a Puritan, botanical, Victorian society until very recently. We tended to push a lot of things under the rug and not to discuss them. And we left our children to find out things on the streets in many instances. So that sex education, as in quotes, as knowledge about sex was passed from child to child. And children aren't the best teachers for complex things. And sort of snickering, joking talk of 7 and 8 year olds is hardly as good as a responsible relationship to an adult. And I don't think it isn't so much guilt, it's confusion and change. And of course, different religious groups in the country take quite different views towards marriage and towards birth control and towards the population explosion. And the fact of these differences gets fed back again into attitudes towards what's taught in the schools.
Do you feel that we might make better progress in terms of acceptance of sex education in schools if we were perhaps to apply a more acceptable name such as Planned Parenthood or Family Relations?
Well, I don't think that Planned Parenthood would exactly solve the problem at the moment, because that, of course, still hits on matters of controversy. But I think family relations, well, it temporarily, this might be so, but a group of people who are determined to find trouble are likely to find trouble anyhow. And I think we have to distinguish between parents who are genuinely disturbed, particularly by the lies that are spread, because their accounts are published in one state or whispered in one state about what's going on in another. Things that are absolutely untrue, but that people have no way of checking. So that if people in a far western state are told that something or other is happening in the east, and the children are being taught all sorts of things that they aren't, and this is what happens in the campaigns against sex education, they have no way of knowing whether this is true or not, and they're alarmed. And so whatever label is used, if that label is used to describe incorrectly what's happening somewhere else, people will be frightened. You know, the same sort of thing happened with mental health. There were extraordinary rumors spread about a new mental health hospital in Alaska. It was said to have 1 million beds, and people were going to be taken to it from the United States. And it was just a question of the number of acres that had been assigned to the hospital. And a great many rumors are built up. And at the present moment, sex education happens to be the target of the same set kind of rumors. So I don't think changing its name would make a great deal of difference.
Well, is there confusion between reproduction education as opposed to sex education?
Well, there is a... the rumors usually stress the fact that children are being taught a great deal about overt sex behavior instead of recognizing that what is being taught is a systematic statement about how human reproduction occurs. And then when young people reach high school age, which is an age where girls may become illegitimate mothers and boys may become illegitimate fathers, and there's a great danger of venereal disease, that they should be taught a good deal more down-to-earth facts about what sex behavior is like. You know, the venereal disease in this country, the increase is primarily in teenage boys, because although if a young man goes in the army, he's given quite adequate teaching about venereal disease. But if he's in school, he's assumed to still be a child who ought to be protected from any such information. And it's this kind of danger to our adolescents that's one of the things that sex education is designed to prevent, to give them a sufficient understanding of the consequences of sex behavior, consequences not only in illegitimacy or venereal disease, but also and the impairment of human relationships and of the impairment of a capacity for the spiritual and human aspects of relationships.
This is Night Call in New York, and we'll take a call this time from Washington, D.C. Mr. Tepper is hearing Night Call over WAMU-FM. Mr. Tepper?
Yes.
Good evening, sir.
Good evening.
Your question.
First, I want to let you know that I'm a confirmed bachelor. I'm all in favor of sex education. I think it's long overdue. But there's this one aspect which is important to remember, that the controversy over recent years in the move for sex education, I think the impetus comes from the fact of the rising number of so-called illegitimate children, and the fact that it is creating a burden on the welfare rolls and on the so-called taxpayers, and that's the reason why they're so concerned. It's not for humanitarian reasons. I mean, it was not so long ago, about 50 years ago, that Margaret Sanger almost got tarred and feathered in New York when she advocated the birth control. Of course, see, at that time, there was still a need for cheap labor, but now with automation, people become superfluous. And then there's this fear of what the sociologists like to call social dynamite, that in time you'll have a mass of people where there won't be jobs for them and not enough food, and they'll create a revolutionary situation which the power structure would prefer to avoid.
Well, I think that it is true that in many parts of the country, there is the reaction against illegitimacy, and proposals of measures to deal with it have come from people who are worried about the welfare rolls. But I don't think this is the most important point. I think there are two very important things happening here. One is the extent to which all children everywhere are exposed to the mass media, and we can't possibly protect them. And they, in the mass media, they get a great variety of peculiar and undigested things that are not primarily arranged to give them a responsible and well-rounded view of human beings. This is one situation. And together with the mass media, the automobile has meant that young people range so far afield, and it's impossible to protect them as they could be protected 100 years ago. The second point is the population explosion. I don't think that it's primarily welfare rolls or automation, because the population explosion is going on everywhere in the world. And as a result, people are coming to realize that every nation will be better off with a lowered birth rate. And once that's recognized, it means that the society is willing to put money into research on population control, and they're willing to back up the kind of education that makes the population control used. And this is happening everywhere in the world. People are coming very rapidly to realize how dangerous the population explosion is. Now, this doesn't deny that what you say, that in local situations, There is a fear of a large unemployed population, and there's a fear of the additional burden of relief rolls. But these are local situations, and I think we have to look at the wider one even more intently.
Mr. Tepper, thank you for calling, sir. Thank you. Sex education in the schools is our conversation tonight with Dr. Margaret Mead. We'll return following station identification. Stay tuned for the Night Call Network.
One black man in the space of a lifetime changed our country forever. Listen to him.
I can never be what I ought to be until you are what you ought to be. And you can never be what you ought to be until I am what I ought to be. John Donne caught it years ago and placed it in graphic terms. No man is an island in time itself. Any man's death diminishes me because I am involved in mankind. Therefore, never sin to know for whom the bell tolls. It tolls for thee.
Dr. Martin Luther King was only one man. You are only one man. But you too can use all that God has given you to light your world. Where do you start? In your church or synagogue, where you will find people who believe in God and in man. Your faith says all men are brothers. Listen, you can do something. You must.
Speak for yourself from anywhere in North America. Call Night Call Collect from the East, Midwest, and West on 212-749-3311. From the New York area, call 866-5010. Again, Del Shields.
And returning to our guest, Dr. Mead, and sex education in the schools. And Dr. Mead, what kind of materials should be used for sex education classes?
Well, I think that we ought to move as much as possible to the use of films that have been very carefully worked out by quite a large number of people working together, and working together with younger children criticizing and discussing the films, and older children working with them, and parents and grandparents and teachers, of course. We have some chance of producing the kind of film that can both educate the young and not upset the old if we put a great deal of effort into it. But on the whole, it's very hard to take teachers who weren't brought up to teach things of this sort and expect them to have exactly the right kind of tone of voice. They do the best they can, but I think it's quite hard on them.
Well, the recent Gallup poll that Fred Hechinger in the New York Times reported that 71% of all adult Americans want schools to offer sex education, yet there are many groups who have become established over the past couple of years and have been doing everything to keep sex out of the schools. Now, would you say that the Gallup poll is accurate, or does it actually reflect, or does it reflect in some degree that what most Americans are thinking about sex education in schools?
Well, I would think that a very large number of Americans aren't thinking anything about it. You know, that it's going along perfectly calmly in their community at whatever level it was, and it hasn't gotten stirred up yet. But we know that in American society you can stir people up on almost any issue if you hit the right note. And if you combine fear and fear of a whole series of other things, because sex education gets tied to everything that people are afraid of or don't like, atheism, communism, all sorts of things. You can stir things up very, very rapidly with a very small percentage of the American people really being involved, so that you can have a Gallup poll. We've had this over and over again. On all sorts of issues. At the time of, for instance, of not enforcing land-lease returns on Britain, where every responsible organization in the country was in favor of it, the letters that reached Congress were all against it. The letters were written by a small number of negatively excited individuals. And this is a characteristic kind of democracy that we have, that small groups of people, for or against anything, can make a considerable dent temporarily on public opinion.
Well, when we view what is happening in the so-called permissive area of the arts, and we see the new freedom that's being accorded the movies as well as the legitimate theater, are we beginning to become a nation of spectators as opposed to being participants?
No, I don't think this makes us more spectators than we've been at any other time when we've watched baseball games or football games or whatever. We are a country where there's a great deal of watching of what other people do. Instead of everybody going out on Sunday and climbing a small mountain the way they do in Norway or Austria, we tend to congregate in large groups and watch sports, or we watch them on TV. We do a great deal of watching it rather than walking, for instance. But I don't think that's got very much to do with the new freedom on the stage.
Mr. Wagner is calling in from Des Moines, Iowa. He's hearing Night Call over KRNT. Mr. Wagner? Mr. Wagner? I'm sorry, I thought we had a call from Des Moines. I'll probably disconnect. All right, sex education in the schools is our conversation tonight with Dr. Margaret Mead calling in from New York City. And Dr. Mead, why is it that in this country we seem to be so frightened of the word sex or sex relations?
Well, sex is one of the things that worries a Puritan society. I mean, we've been a society where at least 50% of the people have been interested in regulating the other 50%. And this has been true ever since this country was founded. It was founded by groups of people with terribly strong prejudices about a great many things. And they set up rules. You couldn't kiss your wife on Sunday. You couldn't take a bath in a bathtub in the winter. A great variety of rules that are totally unenforceable. And then people sit down and imagine what it would be like if they broke them. And at present, the young are using the adult fear of open discussion of sex and adult interest in pornography as ways of showing their rebelliousness or provoking the adults. So I don't think the young people are very much interested in the four-letter words that they're using, or very much interested in nudity, because they've grown up in a world in which the adults were publishing plenty of such material. But they realize that there are a large number of adults who can be extremely embarrassed or angered, and people who are embarrassed get angry at hearing words pronounced in, that they've never heard pronounced aloud before in mixed company, or seeing things that they have never seen before, except when they were in pornographic books sold under a counter. And all of this, so that the excitement about sex is partly a sense that if you take off the taboos on speech and take off the taboos on pictures used publicly, you will then somehow produce a terrific amount of dreadful imitative behavior. And this is one of the things that great many people believe rather strongly.
Sex education in the schools is the conversation tonight on Night Call with Dr. Margaret Mead. We'll begin accepting, or we will take more calls following station identification. Stay tuned for the Night Call Network.
What does the black man want, anyway? He wants what you want. You want to live in the best house you can afford? So does he. You want to crack at a better job? So does he. You want a good education for your kids? So does he. You want to be treated with respect? So does he. And you want to be accepted, just for yourself? So does he. We all want pretty much the same things. But it takes love to accept each other as brothers. And love comes from God. If you want to put faith, hope, and love to work in your life today, write for this free booklet now, The Turning Point, Religion in American Life, 184 Fifth Avenue, New York, New York, 10010. That's 184 Fifth Avenue, New York, New York, 10010.
Speak for yourself from anywhere in North America. Call Night Call Collect from the East, Midwest, and West on 212-749-3311. From the New York area, call 866-5010. Again, Del Shields.
And we have our caller on the line from Des Moines, Iowa again, Mr. Wagner, hearing Night Call over KRNT. Mr. Wagner?
Yes, sir.
But we lost you there for a moment.
Sorry, I missed you the other time.
All right, sir. Your question, sir.
I've tried to become fairly well informed in this sex education area, and I take it Dr. Mead is in favor of the sex education in the schools. And I've tried to inform myself both with our material here on the local basis in Des Moines. I've gone to the school board and looked at the material, seen some films shown, and I've also gone to the state level and obtained a copy of the state guide that our state came out with in April. And I was wondering if Dr. Mead realized that there is a association of doctors that have gone on record this last April and have said that they are opposed to this type of sex education coming into our schools because of the overemphasis. Their resolution states, after they make several whereases, that therefore be it resolved by the House of Delegates of the Association of American Physicians and Surgeons, Incorporated, in regular session assembled in Chicago, Illinois, this 12th day of April, 1969, opposes incorporation of instruction in sexual technique or family living into the schools. Now, most of the time we're told that the doctors are in favor of this type of program. I also have the AMA resolution, which was made in July. And basically, from what I get out of their six-point resolution, it could be for the old hygiene type program that I had 25 years ago.
Well, doctors are one of the most grievously uninformed groups on the subject of sex and human relations that we have in the United States. I mean, I teach in medical schools, and I know that our young doctors have been given no experience whatsoever. There are a group, very large number of them, and especially the ones who graduated quite a long time ago, that whose whole approach to life has excluded any attention to human relations. Such doctors, on the whole, are very uninterested in psychiatry and uninterested in public health also. They've had a very specialized education. They had to work very hard at it. They have to work very hard now to keep up with their specialties. And they are not well informed on community needs. I mean, the idea that sex, that anything taught in the schools, any curriculum material is stimulating as compared with what our youngsters get in films, get even in the ads outside a film house, get in paperbacks that they can buy in any store and get on TV is ridiculous. And if anybody who's worrying about sex education would just sit down and study the movie ads and go and look at them, and go and just look at the ads outside houses that say for adults only, and go into the ordinary drugstore and look at the books that any youngster can buy, it's absolutely ridiculous to think that anything that they're taught in school could possibly be stimulating. To begin with, school just isn't stimulating. And things that the children are taught in school, they treat very soberly and they're usually bored with.
Dr. Mead, could I ask one more question on this? Now, at a legislative hearing earlier this year, the man in charge of our local program here said that there would be no morals taught in the program, although the state guide does say that morals should be brought in. Now, do you feel that morals should be a strong part of this type of a program?
Well, it depends on what you... I think ethics should be a strong part of the program. And I would distinguish between morals and ethics in that what we mean by morals are usually the particular views about sex held by some particular group in the population. Mm-hmm. Now, if you have a mixed population as we have in most big cities in the United States, and you have Roman Catholics, and you have the many kinds of Protestants, fundamentalists, and very modern, advanced people, and you have Orthodox Jews and Reformed Jews and people of different ethnic backgrounds, the views that they have of what are morals differ enormously. I don't think the views they have of ethics differ. And so when one says no morals will be taught, what they mean by morals is that they won't take one religious view as opposed to another, really. Mm-hmm. And you can't do that. I mean, in a country where we separate church and state and where we respect each religious group, you can't impose on one group's ideas on all the children in the school. But ethics is a different thing, and as far as I know, all good sex education courses in family relations talk about responsibility. They talk about responsibility for one's own body and one's own health and one's relations to other people and taking responsibility for other people. That is ethics. This is something that you'll find everywhere in the world where they're human beings. We have responsibility towards each other and for our children. And this, I think, should be taught.
Could I make one more comment? Am I on a time limit or something?
No, go right ahead, sir.
In the film I seen, and one of the most objectionable parts I saw to this film, besides the actual content itself, was the attitude that these children could talk to their parents and they could talk to their ministers or priests, but the final decision was to rest in them. Now, I feel this is taking away, when I have two children in school, the attitude that basically, even legally, I believe, that I am responsible for their actions until a certain age. And I don't feel that this is right to have these films shown in school say that the parent should not be the one that should help guide them in their life, because I feel that as a parent, this is one of my main responsibilities to guide the children.
Now, I don't quite understand this. What you understood the film to say was that the children should not talk to their parents?
No, they could talk to the parent and talk to the minister, but basically, in other words, the final decision as to what attitude they take, whether it be negative or positive, was to rest in them. And this film is used clear down to 13-year-olds. And I don't feel, one of the doctors in the article the other day in the paper, who was basically for sex education, thought that children ought to have this. But when he got to driving, he thought they was too immature to drive a car. And this is the way I feel with these sex education material that I've seen in this film. They're too immature to be able to make proper decisions at 13 years old when they're told not to take the counsel of their minister or parent.
Well, they aren't actually told not to take the counsel, are they?
No, they're told that they can hear, but basically what they are told is to undermine the attitude of the parent and the minister and decide for yourself.
Well, I think that, you know, that's your interpretation. But I think what is actually meant, I don't know this particular film, mm-hmm. so I'm talking merely on what you've told me.
Yeah.
But I would think that what the film is trying to do, and it may not have succeeded, because many films don't succeed in doing what they think they're doing, but what they mean to do is to say, you've got to grow up to be a responsible person and understand these things. You see, because it's all very well to say the parents are responsible. The parents today, in a sense, cannot protect their children. If they are sending them to an ordinary school in an ordinary city, they can't protect them. They can't protect them against information. They can't protect them against the things they see and hear about and are exposed to. And the best protection, therefore, we can give our children is a sense of responsibility themselves. We can't chaperone our girls as we once did. And we can't threaten our boys as we once did, as when fathers told them that they would disinherit them if they married the wrong girl. We can't do this anymore, and so we have to make the children responsible. Now, you may have interpreted the film as saying, don't listen to your parents. But I think what the film meant to say was, you must learn to become responsible yourself. And after all, when we have a society when 13-year-old girls can be exposed to motherhood and nobody seems able to protect them, why, to talk about their being immature, they're not too immature to be hurt, and hurt terribly.
Mr. Wagner, thank you for calling, sir.
Yes, thank you.
Thank you. Dr. Mead, the question of sex education, does this, or do some parents feel that by teaching sex in school, that it's taking away parental responsibilities, Mr. Wagner was attempting to elaborate on?
Yes, I think they do quite strongly, but the parental responsibility they're usually talking about is the right of the parent not to tell the child anything, and simply to give them either vague, very vague orders or sometimes very vague threats. I don't think there are very many parents who are thoroughly conversant with a scientific vocabulary in which they can discuss sex, who objects to sex education. Oh, there may be some, because in any school system, you're likely to have a teacher who doesn't do something as well as they should. So I can imagine some very sophisticated parent objecting to what went on in the school as being rather stupid, or occasionally the children being frightened. I heard a case just a couple of weeks ago about a teacher in school in England who took a group of senior high school students to see a dissection in an anatomy class in the university, with no warning at all and no preparation for it. Now, I think if there'd been parents around, they would have been horrified, and quite justly. So that things can occur that parents would object to, who would have been giving their children a full education. But you know, sex education is not something that parents are very good at, and they never have been very good at. They tend to be embarrassed in dealing with their own children. Some societies say it the other way around. They say that, you know, parents ought to be protected. They shouldn't have to hear any of their children's questions or their children's talk. And there's something to be said for someone a little less close to the children, a little less close to them and living in the same house and sharing the same life, telling them things in a more impersonal and objective way.
Is it possible, then, that one of the ways to help sex education in schools would be for sex education of parents?
Yes, I think so. You see, I think that ideally a school system would work rather slowly, talk things over with parents, then have the kind of session that is getting very popular now where you have some, say, high school youngsters and parents talk to each other and discuss what they think about things. I would like to have any film that is shown in the school something that could also be shown to the parents. Now, there's some parents might be upset, but this has been true of all the other things that parents have had to learn. Perhaps you remember when the new math started, and parents for the first time discovered that they could no longer help their third and fourth and fifth grade children in mathematics. And this was very rough, because the parents had always been able to correct the arithmetic problems. And we had droves of parents going to night school to catch up with their children. And this was a very good thing.
This is Night Call in New York. Sex Education in the Schools is our conversation with Dr. Margaret Mead. We'll return to our guest following station identification. Stay tuned for the Night Call Network.
Most people in this world are well-intentioned. They believe in doing the right thing. But not today, thank you. Tomorrow, perhaps, or the day after that. For instance, The matter of racial hate and racial injustice. Something really should be done about that. But not today, thank you. Or the neglect of large groups of our people, like the elderly and the poor. Maybe tomorrow we'll think about all that. Or our indifference to war. Let's think about that tomorrow, too. If we're lucky enough to be around. If you truly live your faith, you can bring light to our troubled world. And today is the day you have to live your faith, not tomorrow. So worship this week and practice your faith every day of the week.
Speak for yourself from anywhere in North America. Call Night Call Collect from the East, Midwest, and West on 212-749-3311. From the New York area, call 866-5010. Again, Del Shields.
Mr. Gibbs is calling in from Cedar Falls, Ohio. I'm sorry, Cedar Falls, Iowa. And he's hearing Night Call over WSUI. Mr. Gibbs?
Yes.
I had you in the wrong state there for a moment.
Excuse me?
I said I had you in the wrong state for a moment.
That's quite all right. I just wanted to make a brief affirmation of what Dr. Mead said a few moments ago about the lack of the ability of most parents to deal with sex education intelligently or perhaps at all with their children. Out here in Iowa, down in Keokuk, which is a small town in the Mississippi way, down in the, well, actually not really a small town for Iowa, but down the southeast corner of the state, there's a fellow who's been teaching a sex education course for better than 20 years now, so that he has a rather unusual situation in terms of length of the history of the course. And he's been keeping statistics on, since about 1947, if I recall accurately, on different aspects of the class and attitudes. And one of the questions he has asked his students is where their primary source of sex information comes from. Now, I should clarify also that he's been teaching this long enough that he has some second-generation students, that is to say, some of the children of his earlier students he is now teaching in high school. Now, in the overall group of students he has taught, more than 80% report that they have gotten their sex information from some other source than their parents. However, among his, when he isolates the second generation students, the children of the students he had back in the late 40s, only about 25% said that they got their sex information from outside their homes. So this seems to me to be a rather striking piece of solid data that children who grow up dealing with sex information in a straightforward, honest manner in school are apparently much better able to deal with it with their own children in their homes later. And as this teacher puts it, if sex information, sex education were well enough taught and widely enough taught, in effect, it could put itself out of business, because it would then be dealt with in homes as most of these people, the conservative branch, the conservative element, who doesn't want it to be taught in the schools anyway.
Well, you know, I think that's perfectly, that if you give youngsters while they're in school ways of talking about sex and thinking about sex without embarrassment and with an acceptance of sex as one part of life, they can then talk to their children. And this then could become the standard. The only thing I mind a little in your statement is the word honest. As if people who are franker are more honest. And I think that's one of the things that is rather widespread as a notion at present. And to brand people who have been taught to be exceedingly reticent and to refuse to discuss things because they're things that shouldn't be discussed as dishonest, I think then rather increases the gap between the advocates of sex education and their opponents. I think we have to recognize that it's true that this issue about sex education is being used for political purposes.
Right.
And that's manipulative and maneuvering, you know, like any other low-level political activity.
Mm-hmm.
But we also have to recognize that a great number of the parents that are worked up are as being as honest as they know how to be, but they grew up in a different tradition.
That's correct. I didn't mean that inference, actually.
Yeah.
Okay,
thank you for calling, sir. Thank you. Out to Amherst, Massachusetts, Mr. Moran is hearing night call of WFCR-FM. Mr. Moran?
Yes.
Good evening, sir.
Good evening. I'd like to ask Dr. May two questions. First of all, does she feel that, shall we say, in quotes, the now generation will be better able, when they are parents, to cope with this question of sex with their children? And also, as far as on the university level, does she feel that the universities are coping with this problem, especially in the educational schools, and how to, shall we say, approach the subject of sex with children?
Now, on the question of the now generation, yes, I think probably they will be more able to deal with their children. At least the ones who are now worrying a great deal about our present family forms and about whether their parents were hypocrites or not, they're thinking very hard. And I think that one of the things that they will stress, they seem to care a lot about, is what they call honesty, which means a great deal more frankness, immediate frankness, that was popular before. And I don't think they'll be very embarrassed by some of the things about sex that embarrass an older generation. Now, on the question of universities, I haven't any statistics, but my general impression is that universities have done very little. That there are sociology courses, and a few people take them. Or there are courses in family life that are available to a limited number of students. And, of course, in some teachers' colleges and normal schools, they'll be preparing students to deal with whatever is in the state curriculum. But I don't think that the universities are doing anything like what they ought to do. But actually, the key places for education are high schools, and training people, the people who teach in high schools, and also the clergy, as when they're taught in theological seminaries, this is also very important. It's the teachers and youngsters at the time when they had better know something, because they're being exposed to such extremely provocative conditions today. These are the key points, and they should also, of course, include the parents in the community.
Fine, thank you.
Thank you for calling,
thank
sir.
Thank you very much.
Dr. Mead, you have stressed that some of the opposition to sex education in schools is a political thing. Could you just elaborate on that for us? What is the political thing?
Well, in American politics, political parties seize on issues that are essentially emotional in tone, where they can manipulate a large number of people. For instance, we had a mayoralty campaign in Chicago at the end of the 20s, in which one of the issues was that King George was going to come back and take over the United States. Now, this wasn't anything that anybody in their senses would have believed, but we have a very strong feeling in this country that we got away from Britain and we certainly don't want any King George back. And by using such threats as this, when he was really, of course, talking about relations between the United Kingdom and the United States, it was possible to raise people's anxiety. And this is a very common issue. I mean, if you elect Party X, crime in the streets will increase. If you elect Party X, our schools will be wrecked. If you elect Party X, we'll not only have fluorine put in the water and fluoridation against our will, but we'll have everything else put in the water. These are very old techniques, and
They can be used to arouse people's fears, and at present, people in the United States are very anxious. They're anxious about the rate of change. They're anxious about the state of the world. They're afraid of the outbreak of serious warfare. They're distressed by the continuation of the war in Vietnam. They're worried about the state of our inner cities. A very large group are hounded by inflation and worried about losing the homes that they've just gotten. And the people who are in a position which makes them particularly subject to worry, can their fears can be exploited politically. And it's one of the things that skillful and not too responsible politicians have always known how to do.
Well, do you feel optimistic that we will reach a point of more maturity to be able to accept sex and education in our schools without the problems that we're having now?
Yes, none of these issues last forever. They lose their bite, you know. And you can stir up a tremendous amount of trouble and retard the protection of our children. Rather seriously, but I think that, as the Gallup poll says, 70% of the American people want sex education, and on the whole, they'll probably get it. But whenever a political group pick up something like this, they temporarily stop progress.
Only temporarily.
Only temporarily on the whole, yes. I mean, we move steadily along. If you go back to what were the major disputes in the past, slowly they've been corrected, you know. When we think about the problems of strikes or of violence today, and we forget the violence of labor disputes a generation ago, and what we have today are violence from quite different groups, and not the labor groups who've learned how to negotiate with the big companies. But we now have other groups of powerless people who, because they're powerless, are revolting in the only ways that they have. But in time, these things settle down, and settle down at, hopefully, a higher level.
Dr. Mead, we want to thank you so much for being our guest tonight on Night Call.
Thank you.
We would like to ask our Night Call listeners to do something for us. We've been asking for mail from you in our efforts to keep Night Call on the air. We'd like to know more about our Night Call audience, how big it is, where it is, and how you personally feel about Night Call. So we hope that over the weekend that you'll take a moment out, drop us a letter to Night Call, Box 48, Radio City Station, New York City, zip code 10019. The address again is Box 48, Radio City Station, New York, zip code 10019. And when you do that, you certainly will be helping us and all of the family here at Night Call. Tonight on Night Call, our conversation has been sex education in the schools. Our guest has been Dr. Margaret Mead, calling in from New York City. This is Del Shields in New York. Good night and peace.
Listen Monday night. Discuss freely and responsibly your own personal opinions on Night Call. Produced by the United Methodist Church, presented with National Council of Churches, National Catholic Office for Radio and Television, American Jewish Committee, and Urban Coalition.